Okay, all right, so let's hear it. What are your favorite Disneyland attractions? What is the ride you have to do? The one you have to do. Mr. Toad! I love Mr. Toad!
It's not even funny. I
know. Yeah, it's really not a kid's ride. No, they're very scary. Very scary. Any pirates? Love pirates? Pirates? Haunted Mansion. I love that. With Jack Skellington.
Yeah.
And the, yes, that's very good. Oh, Small World.
Really?
Small World is my favorite. I love it. I love the little dolls. I love Mary Blair. I love Small World. Well, thank you guys so much for letting me come. It's such an honor to come and share Sunday afternoon with you. Thanks, Rick. Thank you for letting me be here. I know you guys have been studying parables, and Rick said, okay, Sarah, what's your favorite parable? And I said, hands down, the story of the prodigal son. And so I've been doing a lot of studying about this parable, especially since Rick and I agreed on this topic for today. And I thought that the best title for today's message is When Exceptional Parables Are Given Mediocre Titles. So I kind of want to think about this idea of the title of the prodigal son and really ask ourselves, is that the best title for this parable? Because in fact, bad titles happen, you guys. For example, Eating People is Wrong. This is a real book. You can buy this on Amazon. All of these book titles, bad titles, real books. I got them all off of Amazon. How about this one? Reusing Old Graves. Real, for real, that's a book.
By the way, that's not the actual book cover.
That's not? Oh, yeah. No, this is not. That's from Amazon. I stole that from Amazon. Okay, how about this one? How to Avoid Huge Ships. That one cracks me up. And it's the second edition. There were two of these. You guys, I can't make this stuff up. The Manly Art of Knitting. Right? When the kids and I see this guy on horseback by our school, and we are going to ask him next time if he knits. How about Everything I Know About Women I Learned From My Tractor? I don't know if I take his advice or not. Everything I Want to Do Is Illegal. Sort of a scary one there. And then finally, Are Women Human? That's a for real book you can get on Amazon. Bad titles happen. And the reality of it is that Jesus didn't title his parables. We titled his parables. He didn't start with, now I'm going to tell you the story of blank. He just told the story, and they got titles as time went on. So what I want for us to think about today is, how would we read the parable of the prodigal son differently if it had a different name? When Rick and I were talking about this, he brought up the fact that a lot of us, and myself included, I wasn't aware of the actual definition of prodigal. I thought it meant wandering or lost. When, in actuality, the word prodigal means lavish, right? Or extravagant. This is a story of an extravagant son. That is not ill-fitting. I just wonder if it is the best title for this parable. And if you have your Bibles right now, let's read it. I am reading from Luke 15:11 through 32. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, let me have the share of the estate that will come to me. So the father divided the property between them. A few days later, the younger son got together everything he had and left for a distant country where he squandered his money on a life of debauchery. Debauchery. Okay. When he had spent it all, that country experienced a severe famine, and now he began to feel the pinch, so he hired himself out to one of the local inhabitants who put him on his farm to feed the pigs. And he would willingly have filled himself with the husks the pigs were eating, but no one would let him have them. Then he came to his senses and said, "How many of my father's hired men have all the food they want and more, and here I am dying of hunger? I will leave this place and go to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired men.' So he left the place and went back to his father's. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was moved with pity. He ran to the boy, clasped him in his arms, and kissed him. Then his father said, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the calf we have been fattening and kill it. We will celebrate by having a feast, because this son of mine was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now the elder son was out in the fields, and on his way back, as he drew near the house, he could hear music and dancing. Calling one of his servants, he asked what it was all about. The servant told him, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the calf we have been fattening because he got him back safe and sound.' He was angry then and refused to go in. And his father came out and began to urge him to come in. But he retorted to his father, 'All these years I have slaved for you and never once disobeyed any orders of yours. Yet you never offered me so much as a kid for me to celebrate with my friends. But this son of yours, when he comes back after swallowing up your property, he and his loose woman, you kill the calf we have been fattening.' The father said, 'My son, you are always with me, and all I have is yours. But it was only right we should celebrate and rejoice, because your brother here was dead and has come to life. He was lost and is found.'" That's a good one, right? And we could probably just, in church right now, it's so, those words are so nourishing to me. It's so lovely and so beautiful. But if we're going to talk about this a little bit, what if we gave it an alternate title? What if we gave it alternate title number one, The Story of the Bold and Arrogant Son? Because this guy kind of makes me mad a little bit in the beginning. I think bold and arrogant is a pretty accurate way of describing the younger son. I mean, basically what he says to his father, when he says, "Give me my inheritance, divide it up right now," he's saying, "I simply cannot wait for you to die. I do not have time for this. I don't want you. I don't want your life. I want your inheritance. I want the money. And I want to go out somewhere else and find what I'm looking for." He was very clear in his intention. It wasn't just, "All right, I'm going to go away for a while and then I'll come back home later." It was, "I'm cutting ties. And normally, a son would probably wait until you were gone, but I can't wait that long. So give me what's coming to me, and I'm going to leave." In essence, when Luke tells us that he went to a distant country, what he's telling us is that this son was rejecting the life that the father had cultivated for him. He was rejecting the culture. He was rejecting his heritage. He was saying, "I want something different than what you have for me." A complete and utter rejection of everything that the father stood for and everything that the father wanted to give his son. I think that is a pretty bold and a pretty arrogant move on his part. And in essence, he was saying, "My most deepest and strongest desire to be loved cannot be met here while I am with you." He's rejecting his father's culture, his father's life, his father's things, and at the very core, his father's love. "The love that you are giving me, Father, is not the love I want. I'm going to go out and look for a different kind of love. I am craving something that you aren't giving me." And I know that resonates with me in a lot of different ways, and that there is a part of me that is constantly searching for unconditional love. And I become the prodigal son every time I search for unconditional love where it cannot be found, right? That is when we become the bold and the arrogant child in the story. And I'm going to guess that we all sort of know subconsciously that the only place where we find unconditional love is in the arms of our Heavenly Father. We know that. Our brains and our minds are ready and willing to say, yes, that is true. I believe that and I want it. And our hearts are often very slow to catch up with that understanding. And so we go around looking for unconditional love in places that simply cannot give us that love. And if you're wondering where you might be looking for it, I would encourage you to look at what has recently disappointed you. This is true for me. I have found in some things that have recently disappointed me that what I was expecting out of that, what I was expecting out of that relationship or that experience or that circumstance, I was expecting something it was incapable of giving me. I wanted its unconditional love, its unconditional attention, its unconditional affirmation. And wanting those things is not wrong. It's how we're wired. We're wired to want and to need that. The problem comes when we ask things to do that for us that are incapable of it. The reality of it is that my spouse can't even give that to me. My kids certainly can't give that to me. My house. I can take care of it. I can love it. I can decorate it perfectly. I can fix the roof. We can upgrade the electrical. That is what we did this summer. We upgraded the electrical in our house, and that is no joke. I can do all of these things to it, and yet it cannot promise me that nothing will ever go wrong. I can't make a deal with my house, right? I can't do that. I can't make a deal with an experience. I can't say, I am going to plan the perfect family vacation, and I am going to pour my entire being into making this experience the best experience possible. That experience cannot promise me back what I am asking of it. And this is true for so many of the things. This is true of the prodigal son, saying, I really do want unconditional love. I just don't want yours. And so he goes off to this distant country and immerses himself in all of the things that he thinks will bring him unconditional love, and finds out eventually that he had it all along. What he was seeking could not be found. And what we are seeking is not wrong. It's where we're looking for it. And so if there is a moral of the story to the bold and arrogant son, it would be that God has no desire for us to wallow in our guilt. So the arrogant son and the bold son went off. He took his inheritance and he squandered it, looking for the very thing that the father so deeply wanted to give him. But what does it say in the text? That while he was still a long way off, the father was there waiting for him to come back. And I can only imagine, as a parent, what I might want to say to my child who had done that and it hurt me on that level. I hope I would do what this father did. But I think that there might be a little bit inside of me that wants to say, I'm glad you finally came to your senses. If you can prove to me that you're not going to do this again, I'll give you maybe a 6-month probation period. Then you can come back in and enjoy the benefits of our family. But let's not get too excited too fast here, because you should really hurt just a little bit the way that you hurt me. I think that would be my human nature to anyone who had done something like that to me. But that was not the response of the father. The son's presence in the face of the father is all the father wanted. That was it. He just wanted him there. I cannot wrap my mind. I will be perfectly honest with you. I cannot wrap my mind around that. I cannot wrap my mind around the fact that the father, that our Heavenly Father, all he wants is our presence. There's nothing else that we can give him. This son came and said, I'm going to admit that I was wrong. I'm going to ask to work my way back up to the status of being a son. I'm going to take all the guilt. I'm going to take all the blame. Whatever it is my father needs me to do in repentance, I'm going to do it. And the father bypassed all that. The father wouldn't even let it come out of his mouth. The son started the conversation. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. And the father didn't even talk to him. The father talked to the servant and said, we're throwing a party. We had to get ready. He didn't want to hear it. He didn't need to hear it because he didn't need his son to earn back the sonship. He never lost that sonship with his father. It had never been missing. The father always recognized it. God does not delight in our brokenness at all. Our brokenness does not make him happy. He does delight in our realization when we understand that we are spiritually dead and desperately need his power to bring us back to life. He didn't say, as I mentioned earlier, it's about time that you recognized, or I'm really glad that you came to your senses. Instead, what he said was, I am so glad that you are back in a place where I can give you life. I can give you the life I wanted to give you all along. I'm so glad you're back. Because that was his only desire for him. He was almost impatient to do it. He didn't even have a dialogue with his son before the party started. And God's desire, the moral of this story, is that God's desire is not for us to be his hired help. His desire is to be our father and for us to be his children. I think it's so ingrained in me to want to work my way up the ladder. I want to start here, and then I want to go here, and then I want to go here, and I want to work my way up, and I want to earn it. I want to earn that I am a child of God because I did. Look at all these great things that I did. I deserve it. And the message in this story is so clear. We cannot earn our keep as children of God. We're not capable, and it's not required of us. That is not what God is interested in. And what, in effect, what he was saying to his son was looking for love in all the wrong places, and the disappointment that brings is horrible. And I am so glad you're back with me. It was pure compassion. No, I told you so's. No, you're going to pay for this later. Just a heart that was broken for the experience that the son had outside of the home of the father. I'm glad that you are here. So now I can give you what you are longing for. So that is story number one. If we have alternate title number two, we would have the story of the achieving son. And you've probably already guessed, if I had to pick one character in the story to relate to, it would be the achieving son. I am the oldest daughter, type A personality, and I love my checklist. Do anybody here, you make your checklist? And then at the end of the day, you add the things you did in addition just so you can check them off. Yes, we are going to connect really well on this. Okay, so here, this is my family in Yosemite this summer. And this is what I'm talking about. This is the Mist Trail. Do you guys know the Mist Trail? Okay, have you done it? It is no joke. It is 2,000 feet elevation gain. 7 miles round trip. It took us 5 to 6 hours. Our kids were like the youngest ones on there, but we did it. And I am like, and this is how I think. I earned that view. I mean, that's literally what I think. I earned that view. I walked for like 6 hours at 2,000 feet with like no oxygen. That is my view. I earned it. You can go to the next one. Look at that. Look at them. And it's just spectacular. It was just fantastic. It was totally worth it. But I had this sense that, like, I accomplished it. I love that sense. I I think I could run on that. I could, if I, what I look for, like my biggest vice is probably that. That I love to accomplish things. And I love to earn things. I think there's one more. Oh, that's just a pretty view, isn't it? Okay, we can go to the next one. Oh, I deleted the wrong one. That's all right. I'll just tell you what it was going to be. I can give you a few more examples. We love Disneyland. And that the pictures that you saw up there were from a year that my family had annual passes. So for 1 year we had passes and we had a goal. We were going to spend 30 days in Disneyland. Not consecutive, but we wanted to say we spent 1 month in Disneyland, and we did it. I think we were at 32 by the end of the year, and it was just like, check, we did it. We met our goal. We also love national parks. Some of you know this about me. And we collect the Junior Ranger badges. Well, and when I say we, I mean my kids do, but it is not for my kids, you guys. It really is not. It is for me. So that every time I go into Luke's room, he has this banner my mom made. There are 43 Junior Ranger badges on that, and I feel so good about that. I feel like, look at all we've accomplished. And I know it's supposed to be for them, but if I'm really honest with myself, we have been to some really mediocre parks because they have Junior Ranger badges, and we got the Junior Ranger badge. Last example here, and then I'll move on. We collect the Starbucks You Are Here mugs, you know, like for different states, or they have some for different cities like Seattle or whatever. Well, we have a whole bunch of them. Every time we go to a new place and there's a new mug, we buy it. And my husband went to Chicago over the summer. I did not go, but he bought the mug. I will not drink out of it because I have not earned the right to drink out of that Starbucks mug. I just, in hardwired into me is this sense of what I deserve and what I've earned and what I should do and what I can do. I don't have to activate it. I mean, the minute my eyes open in the morning, that mechanism in me is going full throttle. And this story, the story of the achieving son, is a story of me, of that person. The interesting thing about these boys is that they both told their father almost exactly the same thing. I don't want what you are offering. And the younger son, said it first. And he said, I don't want this life. I want my inheritance. I'm going to go do something else. The second son said it when his brother came home. His brother came home, and his dad threw a party, and he was just beside himself. And he says to his father, I got to find it real quick. All these years, I have slaved for you and never once disobeyed any orders of yours, and yet you never offered me so much as a kid for me to celebrate with my friends. But for when this son of yours, when he comes back, after swallowing up your property, he and his loose women, you kill the calf we have been fattening. And he refuses to go into the party. If that, Dad, is the way you are going to run this house, I don't want a part of it. He is rejecting his father's grace. He doesn't like that his dad isn't asking his brother to earn it back. Both brothers rejected what their father had offered. And both brothers were really interested in earning. Obviously, the older brother is you know, all about earning it back. But what did the younger brother want to do when he came back? He said, I'll be your hired help. I will earn back the right to be your son. Both brothers were not interested in the way the father was living, and both brothers would rather have earned it. And I think that is so telling. I think that's so telling about our human condition, how so badly we want to deserve things, how so badly we want unconditional love, and we are so distrustful of what God is offering us. It's just that sin nature inside of us. It's what Jesus is talking about when he's telling us this story. You, Father, are being irresponsible and unfair and this is not how I want to operate. The older son, the achieving son, also says, I want you to recognize me. I want to be as important to you as your bold and arrogant son. I want to be recognized in the way that is important to me to be recognized. Can't you see how hard I've worked? Can't you see how hard I am trying to please you? I mean, so this is how I think about it. If the younger son was asking for the inheritance, I think the older son was sort of asking for a certificate of achievement, right? And I think the father would have gladly given that to him. But that would have been the extent of what he would have received. The father gladly gave the younger son the inheritance because he knew that that wasn't the reward. I think the father would have given the older son a certificate because that's not actually the reward either. The reward, the blessing, what can be gained is found in the presence of the father. It's the home. It's the life. It's the love. It's the party. That is what the father wanted to give, that deep sense of unconditional love and life that cannot be found anywhere else. I think the father would have said, if that's all you want, I'll print you out a certificate. But then that's all you have, and you will miss out on the abundant life you can have with me. In this story, the one who stayed home also became a lost man. And that is so powerful to me, because I think of my life, and I think of, we were just joking about this before the church service, about which verses of Amazing Grace do you sing? Like, well, in my church, we sing all five of them. So that is how good of a Christian I am. I know all five of those verses. I'm the one who stayed home. I teach at a Christian school. I'm the one who stayed home. But how easy it is for us children who have stayed home to still become lost, to reject what the Father has for us and what he wants to give us because we want to earn something else. The moral of the story with the achieving son is that God's most deepest desire is for us to be with him, not as a slave or as a hired hand, but as his beloved. It's like, yeah, you are right, older son. You have worked so hard for me, and I didn't need you to earn it. I wanted to do it with you. I wanted to be with you. I wanted to share life with you. That is what I want to give you. I think at this point in the parable and in going through it, it's really important now to travel back to Genesis 3. Because I think that there are incredible parallels between the prodigal son and Genesis 3 with Adam and Eve and sin and the Garden of Eden. Because if you look at both, there's incredible rebellion. The younger son leaves. The younger son does not choose. And the older son does not choose what the father wants for them. Adam and Eve disobey God, do not choose what God wants for them. And in both cases, the Father and God does not force a choice upon them. They are free, free to leave, free to eat of the fruit. But what happens now is we're offered a different ending. So the ending of Genesis 3 was that Adam and Eve were removed from the garden. They couldn't stay. They couldn't make that choice and stay in the garden. And in Luke, Jesus says, I'm here to change the ending of that story. Because here, you have rejected what I've offered you. You have sought out something else. But instead of keeping you out, I am here to make a way for you to come back in. And that's the invitation here. So the younger son took that invitation in a heartbeat. The younger son said, thank you. I am coming back in. I am going to take the way that you have made for me. And the older son has hesitated and has said, but I can't earn that. that has nothing to do with me, then why have I been working so hard if I can't even earn my way back in? And if nobody else has to earn their way back in? And the Father is standing there saying, you've been here with me the whole time. I want you to stay. I don't want your work. I don't want how hard you're trying. I don't want your effort. I just want you. Jesus is giving us a new ending to the first story in the Bible, inviting us to come back in. The moral of this story is that we tend to want the wrong things. We wanted the wrong things in Genesis 3, and we still want the wrong things here in Luke, the story of the prodigal son. We want everything else except that which gives us abundant and everlasting life. And because of that, we are standing on the outside of the Garden of Eden and can't see that it is in that what is inside is what we are actually craving. That the story can end differently. And God, in his infinite and unimaginable love, says, I'm not going to force this ending on you. Just as I did not force Adam and Eve to stay in the garden, they were free to choose to leave, which they did. But I am here because I made a way back for you to come in. We don't know if the older son accepts that invitation. It doesn't say that he didn't, which gives me tremendous hope. But we don't know. We don't know what he chooses to do. Okay, so now we're on to alternate title number 3, the story of the compassionate father. I think that this actually is the title, or should be, of the story. The moral of the story of the compassionate father is this. The father knew that he had lost both of his sons and went out to find them both. Because did you notice? The older son did not come in. The father went out to him. He went out to both of his sons. He was waiting. His arms outstretched, they never went down. They were standing ready through the entire story. He knew he had lost both sons. The father also knew that his sons did not understand their value and worth in his eyes. And that is why they were lost. The younger son, not knowing that what he was craving was the love of the father, and the older son wanting to validate his worth through his effort and by earning it. The father is saying, you guys are looking at this all wrong. You are valuable to me because you are, because you exist, because I made you. The father implores his son to not look at themselves through their own eyes, eyes full of guilt and shame, or eyes full of fear and fault, and implores them to trust that he recognizes and deeply knows their value. The question at the end is this. Can I accept that I am worth looking for? Can I believe that? Can I believe that there is a real desire in God to simply be with me? I think if I could wrap my brain around that for 10 minutes, just for 10 minutes, everything would change. I am not wired to think this way. I want to prove that I am worth looking for. I desperately want to do that. I had this deep fear that if it was me in the story, I would have asked for the printout of the certificate and I would have missed the garden in front of me. I don't want to do that. I want to live every moment knowing that God is looking for me. I don't need to find him. That's the least important part of this process. He is coming for me. He has come for me. He has provided a different ending to the story that opened up his story in Genesis. We no longer have to remain outside of the garden, but we do have to choose his way to come in. In just a few minutes, you are invited to participate in communion, and we are going to sing one of my favorite hymns of all time, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. But we're going to sing it in reverse order, because I kind of like to make things difficult. That is another thing about me. But because as I was reviewing this, I was listening to it in the car, the final verse starts with, it's right there. I'm going to say it wrong if I didn't look at it. Here I owe to grace. Yes, that's where we're starting, right? Oh, to grace, how great a debtor daily I'm constrained to be. Let thy goodness, like a fetter, bind my wandering heart to thee. And as we sing this, I want to start there. I want to start where we are wandering and he has fastened us to him. And then as we progress, as we go through, do you mind, Nick, can we get the next? Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart to take and seal it. Seal it for thy courts above. And then this beautiful, beautiful hymn moves us into the next part where here I raise my Ebenezer. This is what we're doing. And Ebenezer is not Ebenezer Scrooge. Ebenezer is a stone. Actually an altar of remembrance that you can look at it and say, I am building this Ebenezer to remind me of God's faithfulness and of his goodness. So this part, when we sing this, we are responding to God coming for us, meeting us with his arms stretched out. Here by thy great help I come, and I hope by thy good pleasure safely to arrive at home. And in the final verse, we are going to talk about his infinite grace, the compassionate Father who is looking for us because we are worth finding.
So what a fun Sunday for me especially. So We'll hang out for a while and catch up with each other and enjoy. And just so glad you guys were part of this Sunday. And we're looking forward to next Sunday to put ourselves to, yeah, roll up our sleeves.